This week we have begun our study of intellectual property in halacha, Zechuyot Hayotzrim, by learning the most basic, simple idea of the various theories we discussed earlier in the week, that yes, halacha indeed has a native notion of intellectual property. This is most famously the idea of the Shaul HaMeshiv. He brings no real source, no precedent, k'moshim pi ha'gvura. He just says, certainly, it's obvious, he says, Seichel says this, an author of a sefer has the right to benefit, to control the dissemination of his work. He says, it is well known that the inventor, Avraham Yaakov of Horovshov, Rabbi Avraham Yaakov of Horovshov, developed some kind of early 19th century calculating machine, adding machine, and he received royalties from the government in Warsaw. And he says, Lo yehei tara shlema shelanu k'sicha b'teila shelahem. If the non-Jews recognize that the creator, the inventor of something, has a right to it, so too must halacha. Zedavr shah seichel machisho. Seichel tells us this, Maisim b'chol yom, that authors control the right to the fruit of their labor, and therefore he says halacha has such a notion, and later Poskim point out he has no real source, just Seichel and the fact that the non-Jews have the same idea. Other Acharonim, contemporaries of his, were not quite convinced. The Beis Yitzchak has a number of objections, but primarily, B'Yisod HaDvarim, the basic question of does halacha have an have a notion of intellectual property, says he's not convinced. Gam b'chli malachos, mein la rishon me'amalchus, if you don't have a patent, what we would call a patent, that grants you the exclusive rights, lo eida yisr, sh'achal yasek maskunto, I don't know any source for this idea that halacha has a native notion of patent, of copyright. Similarly, the Shaul HaMeshiv's own Talmud, Rabbi Avram of Zavichvast, has a haskama to the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. He prides himself on being a Talmud of the Shaul HaMeshiv, but in the context of his remarks, he doesn't mention the Shaul HaMeshiv, but in the context of his remarks, he writes, O divlo evish, I'm not ashamed to admit, to concede, he says, ki lefi ani esdaiti lo edal piadin lama yesh l'machaber hasefer akach hazeh. Where does an author, who said the author of a work has the right, has this power, lots are bada rotzel ha'atfuch sibur of odapam, to block people from reprinting his works. He doesn't know where such a right exists in halacha. And moving down to our own time, Rav Yehuda Silman, the veteran Dayan of Bnei Brak, says, he sniffs kind of, and he says, the Shaul HaMeshiv has no source except for this anecdote of the Polish government, he says. And he says, well, yes, daiti, pashut, we can't bring a raya from there. Why not, he says, because their laws are not founded on zechuyos or kinyanim, just on svaras of what they think is yosher. Halacha is lamdish. Halacha depends on bailus. I think this is an oversimplification. The Shaul HaMeshiv thought so too, apparently, but I think this is an oversimplification on both counts. First of all, the law is a lot more sophisticated and has a lot more theory, in spite of Justice Holmes' comment about the life of the law being experience. At the end of the day, there is legal theory, and the law does build concept on concept and does have elaborate theoretical basis. Mitzad sheni, halacha is not pure lamdus either. Halacha takes into account what commerce needs, a general sense of fairness, and on the whole, so the Shaul HaMeshiv was not impressed by this argument. The Shaul HaMeshiv felt it is possible to derive halacha from secular law. The remainder of this talk, I want to digress, discuss a favorite topic of mine, general other sorts of cases where poskim derive halachic and hashkafic values from non-Jewish sources of law and ethics. One remarkable example of this is a tshuva of Rabbi Leo Kalatskin and his Imre Shefer. Rabbi Leo Kalatskin, a great Polish gaon from the end of the 19th, early 20th century, he was all, besides being a gaon, he was also a wonderfully idiosyncratic thinker. One never knows the next thing one's about to read when going through his svarim. He has a fascinating tshuva on Tsar Balei Chaim, in the course of which he discusses vivisection, cutting up animals while they're alive for the purpose of medical research. He is not at all convinced that this is mutter, even though he says in general, we do say that human need, human benefit trumps Tsar Balei Chaim, but such a terrible pain, a horrific, unspeakable pain, Tsar Oyom Kazeh, just for speculative research, maybe someday the research will benefit humans, he's not convinced that's mutter. He says, then he starts talking, he brings rayas or arguments, both lahachmer and lahakel, from non-Jewish ethics. He says that this question was discussed in a congress of the great doctors, the great medical researchers of the time in London, Tufresh Mem Aleph, 1881. How does he know this, he says? Because he read this in the Times, the English Times. Hey, August 5th, 1881. Hotza Hashvuyas, he tells you helpfully, the weekend edition, the weekly edition. He says, Professor Virchow, that is apparently Professor Rudolf Virchow, a great pioneering German medical researcher. He's been called the founder of modern pathology. He was instrumental in the acceptance of the cell theory of biology, and he was a major, significant researcher on pathology. And he defended vivisection. He says we're allowed to shek the animal, we're allowed to do other things to it, so we can also do vivisection. On the other hand, he says among the non-Jews there were also those vehemently opposed. He said they even founded a society called the anti-vivisectionistim, the anti-vivisectionists. So he brings raias, or at least he brings support for his arguments, both in favor and against vivisection, by referring to the best moral opinions of his day. A number of other examples I want to discuss are not necessarily involving deriving morality, inherent morality, from the non-Jews, but at least making the more limited argument that we as Jews are required to pay attention to the moral sensibilities of non-Jews to avoid Chilul Hashem. That's certainly something we see in the Gemaras, but the Poskim extend this in various interesting ways and derive prohibitions against various sorts of conduct by looking to what the non-Jews do or don't do. One place this was debated is beginning in the 17th and later the 18th century, as tobacco, smoking, began to spread throughout Europe. A major debate arose among the Poskim over whether one may smoke on a fast day, any of the fast days, Tisha B'Av in particular. So some Poskim felt it was like eating and drinking. Others disagreed. But one particularly interesting argument made by the Darchei Noam in the late 17th century and the Knesset Gdola, also in the 17th century, was we have to refrain, even if according to halacha it might be mutter, we have to refrain from smoking on a fast day because it would be a chilul Hashem. He says, because the non-Jews, they don't smoke on their fast days, he says. He says that it'll be a chilul Hashem. They say you can't smoke on a fast day. And if they see us smoking on fast days, the Darchei Noam says, they're going to say we're mechalel, we're hypocrites, we don't take our fast day seriously. So at least lefnei goyim, at least in the presence of the non-Jews, one should be stringent. Knesset Gdola makes a similar point. He has very strong language against those who want to smoke. He says that they do it in all the cabanas and all the garshish, whatever those are. And the non-Jews who are there, he says, maligim, malivim aleinu, they mock and ridicule us. They don't smoke on their fast days, he says, and they say we do. Each Jew, he says, maktarto biyado, his cigarette or his pipe in his hands, mala ashen lenegdam, raising smoke. Ubalulim yalo lahalos ashan, they make smoke and rings or other kinds of smoke things, and the non-Jews see it, and it's a chilul Hashem. Other poskim are not convinced. The Har HaKarmel says, on the contrary, usually we say that doing what the non-Jews do is a problem of chukas hagoyim. Not doing what they do is always what we're supposed to do. How come all of a sudden here you want to tell them to dafka do what they do? A strange sort of argument. Other things he says that they don't do, malacha on yantif. They don't do malacha on yantif, we do. Maisi says, if the Darchei Noam was strict, he doesn't want to be lenient. We find a similar discussion in the Beis David, Rabbi Yehuda Ayash, the Beis Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda Ayash. He also says he's not convinced by this argument that we shouldn't do what the non-Jews think is wrong. We do a lot of things they think are wrong. Then he says, perhaps we can explain the Shita of the Knesset Gdola when there are completely different Isurim that they have, we don't have, they eat Nevela, we don't eat Nevela, they eat Chazir, we don't eat Chazir. So they understand every person has his own religion, every religion has its own rules. We're Jews, they're Christians, they understand, they're Muslims, when they understand they have different rules. But when it comes to something that we share, like fasting, and they see smoking as a violation of fasting, they also have an idea of fasting. So that they don't understand, that our fasting has different rules. That's when the Achronim HaMachmer, they say that it's a Chilul Hashem. If we both share a certain general category of observance, such as fasting, then we have to follow the same stringencies as they do. That is what the Knesset Gdola says. It's worth mentioning here, Rav Yosef Zecharia Stern, commenting on the Knesset Gdola's extreme stringency with regard to smoking, he says you have to take that in context. He says it is known that the Knesset Gdola initially fell prey to Sabbateanism, believed in Shabbat Tzvi. Subsequently, he realized, of course, the error, and he was quite zealous in rejecting Shabbat Tzvi. He says, it's Yadua, Rav Stern says, those who had initially been followers of Shabbat Tzvi were among the most zealous of his opponents after they saw the light. Ad Kedei Kach, he says, the Knesset Gdola had actually gotten a rabbinic position when his opponent, who was an anti-Sabbatean, was thrown out. So the Knesset Gdola says anything to do with Sabbateanism was very, very strict. Since Shabbat Tzvi's people getting rid of the fast days as a Aschalta de Geula was their thing, the Knesset Gdola, after he realized the error, the folly of Shabbos Tzvi, he was very, very strict on anything to do with fast days. But in any event, this is one issue where, on the one hand, some of the Acharonim said that we have to be machmer, whatever the non-Jews are machmer regarding fasting. The other Acharonim said, on the contrary, they have their own religion, they have Chukas HaGoyim, we don't do Chukas HaGoyim. But nevertheless, there were some major poskim, Darchei Noam and the Knesset Gdola, who felt that we should be strict if they are strict. This arose again in the context of cremation. The Rav Zev Wolf Leiter in his Beis David has a fascinating tshuva on cremation. What does the halacha allow cremation? Apparently there's no absolutely clear halachic ruling in the early poskim about cremation. Rav Leiter says it is absolutely forbidden, he says. At the end of his tshuva he says, Kvar nimnu v'gamru chachmei gedolei hadar. It's an Isser Gomer, one who does it is Kofer Bedas Yisrael. But in the context of the tshuva, he goes back and forth. Initially, he says, maybe we shouldn't cremate because the ancient Romans, Titus, other ancient Romans used to cremate, so Bichukas Hagayim, so we should not cremate. Then, remarkably, Tokre Dibur, in the very same breath, he turns around and says an argument just the opposite, he says. Since contemporary non-Jews don't cremate due to religious reasons, Tchias HaMesim, they do not cremate their bodies, so if we did, we have to respect that. It would be a chilul Hashem. He brings this b'shem Rav Meir Arik, he says, Kevin da goyim machmirim, they don't do cremation, it would be a chilul Hashem. And we should do that too. We should also be machmir. And then he goes on and brings various other precedents to this idea that doing something that the goyim forbid is a question of chilul Hashem. He brings the discussion about smoking. Tfilas Keri, because the Goyim were stringent about it. Another interesting example, he says, the Rashbash. Rashbash talked about wearing shoes in a shul. Rashbash was very machmer, and he says, how can it be mutter, he says? The house of the lowliest Arab peasant, he says, nobody could possibly go in there with shoes. You can't wear shoes indoors, it would be a terrible insult to the host. Beis Elokim, he says, Eze Kvodov, Eze Maro, how could we possibly allow such a thing, he says. Even if there wouldn't be an Isser, he says, it would be Cherpasa Uma. It would be a national disgrace, since the general culture considered that disgraceful. We have to respect that, too. So Rav Leiter goes back and forth on this point of being stringent about the things, smoking he brings. There were two sides to the issue. There were those who said, on the contrary, Chukas HaGoyim, we should not do what they do. But there were also those who said, we should be Machmer, and that's a reason to forbid cremation, because the non-Jews in his day forbade cremation. Another example arises in the 20th century, a very sharp dispute between Rav Moshe Feinstein and Rav Yaakov Breisch, one of the most contentious, vehemently contested halachic disputes of the 20th century, IVF, in vitro fertilization. Rav Moshe famously allowed, at least B'shas Adchak Gadol. Many others, particularly the Hasidic poskim, were appalled they could not tolerate such a heter. Rav Yaakov Breisch in particular, and the Chalkas Yaakov, carried on a fierce correspondence with Rav Moshe, where he attempted to refute Rav Moshe. So aside from the various technical, formal halachic prohibitions, one of his arguments was that the Catholics, he says, they treat this as an abomination, a moral abomination. They absolutely would not allow such a thing as IVF. So he says, it would be a chilul Hashem. Be a chilul Hashem for us to allow it. He brings Amadati Mishtomim, he says, it's a Dover Meshukertz and Mesuav, even the Catholics and the Pope, he says, they were Yotze Betokev, Begilui Das, to forbid it. It's like Masei Eretz Mitzrayim, Masei Eretz Kenan. He says, since the Catholics forbid it, they consider it's Nus, he says, they're Machpid in general, and any tampering with reproduction, even between a husband and wife, birth control, other things, but certainly they consider it's Nus, he says, we have to forbid it too. And he brings a couple of riots for this general thing, that if the non-Jews have a certain moral position, we have to defer to it. One of his riots is a celebrated ruling of the Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham is discussing building construction via non-Jews on Shabbos, and there are certain ways that might be mutter. Kablanus, contractor, he's not a poel, you didn't tell him you have to work on Shabbos, he just has the general job to do, and he chooses to do it on Shabbos. That might be mutter, Mikra Din, the Magen Avraham says. However, Magen Avraham's language is a little cryptic, but the way that Chachamim understand it is, since the non-Jews, the Christians, the European Christians, do not do work on their holiday, I guess Sunday or other holidays, even via non-Christians, they won't have a Jew do work for them. They view that as Chilul Sunday, Chilul holiday. So we Jews, we too, if we would do Malacha on our Shabbos, on our holidays, via non-Jews, that would be a Chilul Hashem. They would say we're being Mechal Shabbos. Says Rav Breisch here too. If the Catholics, if the non-Jews see IVF as Nus, We have to respect that. And we too can't do IVF because that would be a great Chilul Hashem. Rav Moshe was not at all convinced. Rav Moshe says, on the contrary, that's Chuk Zagayim, that we saw before. That's always something. We don't do what the non-Jews do. They have their rules, we have our rules. What about the Magen Avraham? The Magen Avraham, he says, has nothing to do with that. I don't fully understand his distinction. He says, over there, they see us as being Chilul Hashem, as being Mechal Shabbos. They see us as being hypocrites, because they say, oh, you pretend, you're so religious, you keep Shabbos, you're not keeping Shabbos, you're doing construction via non-Jewish laborers. Masha Ankein Harry says, since Rav Moshe argues that the Catholics and the Jews have two very different conceptions of Znus, the Catholic conception has to do with procreation, therefore anything that can result in offspring being created is Znus, while the Jewish notion, it applies even to sterile people, even to older people, infertile people, is still a question of Znus. We consider it the act itself. Therefore, Moshe says, we don't learn from the Catholics. I don't fully understand that. You can say the same thing for Chilul Shabbos. Our conception of Melacha Shabbos is certainly very different from their notion of rest on their holidays. Yet, the Goyim don't understand that, and they think that if they think something is forbidden, they think we're hypocrites for not doing it. So I don't know why you wouldn't say the same thing here. If they think this is Znus, they think that we're being Mizana. Rav Moshe says, no, they see we're very Machmer on Znus. Okay, but they see we're very Machmer on Chilul Shabbos too. So I don't really understand the difference. But nevertheless, the Magen Avraham is widely accepted that we cannot do work, construction work, even via non-Jews. If the non-Jews see that as Chilul Shabbos, it would be a Chilul Hashem. Rav Breish extends that to in vitro fertilization. Rav Moshe rejected the analogy. One last example appears in the Zecher Yehoshua for Yossi Zechariah Stern. He was discussing holding weddings in shul. One of his major objections, he was quite opposed to the practice, one of his objections was too much singing and levity and frivolity, and he goes on to discuss how terrible it is to have music in shul, certainly instrumental music, even choral music, even chazanas he's very upset about. He has quite choice words for the chazanim. And he says, even the Goyim don't do it. He says, the Goyim don't have, I don't know which Christians he was talking about. He says, they don't have music in their synagogues when they have a procession in the street. They even stop playing the music. They even stop playing the music when they pass their churches. He says, Bakpidim Hagoyim Shalahavi Minagnim Atokbeis Tfilasam, Tor Tiflasam B'Shum Zman. They consider that a head or covered is disrespectful. And he says, when they pass the church, they stop their music until they pass. That is the practice of both the Ishmaelim, the Muslims, as well as the Christians, except the Catholics. I'm not sure Protestants, the Orthodox Christians, not sure what he's referring to. They don't have any music in there, he says. There's no music. And then he says, terrible thing, music during davening. He says, what a horrible idea. He brings the Magen Avraham, he discusses the question about smoking. He says he complained bitterly about the Chazanim, that especially if they have non-Jewish songs, but even Jewish songs, he says music, even though you find music during the Shira, that might have been after the Shira, not actually during the Avodah, he says, the Levium he talks about. He says, he makes very, he says, even the Beis HaMikdash, he says that even the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't mean that they had it during the actual Avodah. He says that Tfilah is Makom Avodah Shebelev, Ein Makom L'Nigunim, just saying the very, very Litvish of Stern was the quintessential Litvak, only Amira Nusach Tfilah, no singing, no music, B'Kovid Rosh. Even the Levium, he says if you mix singing with service of God, it's Vahaya Kinar V'Nevel Tov V'Chalil, as Paul Hashem lo yabitu. Even the Mulchama, he says, when they had Klei Zemer, he says, to arouse people, he says, we don't know that they were during the Amiras Hodu itself. Even the Shiras Miriam, he says, the Mitzaltayim V'Tupim may not have been during the Shira, and Shira Hodah is different than regular Tfilah of Tachnunim, which has to be Kovid Rosh. He was a real Litvak. You can't have music in the Shul, it's Derech Gaiva, it's Parik Ol. Tfilah has to be Hachna, Mora, Kovid Rosh. And again, one of his main arguments is that even the non-Jews, he claims, and his environs were terribly opposed, firmly opposed to music during services, and we Jews, too, have to defer to that and not do that which they think is holiness and an improper decorum during davening.